Welcome to Local Talk Monday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, events, and places in central Iowa. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for the hour, with engineer Mike Murphy is here, our steady hand at the controls. And currently it is 70 degrees. And wasn't there a record low last week of 19? Anyway, might be the high for today. Yesterday I was seeing that the high was predicted to be 67. So temperatures are going to be falling. There's a cold front arriving this afternoon. Possibly some rain. And there is a low tonight of 39. Winds will be out of the south-southeast at 10 to 20 miles per hour. And its highs will be in the 50s and 60s later in the week. Our sunrise will be 7:38 a.m. this morning and sunset this evening at 6:19 with a sliver of a crescent moon that is waning if we get to see the moon tonight. Later in the hour, we'll have Morgan Christensen sharing her bird study, and Lisa Heddens will join us as she is running for Story County Board of Supervisors, and a whole lot more on Local Talk. Yet first, let's welcome Dennis Hart with a news summary from this past week from the newspapers throughout Iowa.
Iowa Republican Governor Kim Reynolds and her Democratic opponent Deidre DeGeer in a televised debate, one day after a new poll shows Reynolds with a big lead. And more new polls about other big races in Iowa, about abortion, and about President Biden's popularity here. All made big news around the state last week. First, that debate between Reynolds and DeGeer. They offered much different visions on abortion, tax policy, and education funding, among other things, last Monday night. On abortion, DeGeer said what she called Reynolds' crusade against choice has harmed access to reproductive care across Iowa. She said she wants to codify the right to abortion in Iowa that previously had been established in the Roe v. Wade decision, which the U.S. Supreme Court struck down earlier this year. Reynolds has asked a state court to reinstate into law a ban on abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy, and she said during the debate she would not weigh in on the issue while the court is deciding the matter. She asked DeGeer whether she supports abortion until the moment of birth. DeGeer said, in her words, "My personal belief has no space in a woman's doctor's appointment." The two also disagreed on funding for state education. The governor has advocated letting parents use state funding to transition their children from public to private schools or to homeschooling. DeGeer opposes that and says the state should spend more money on public schools. And Reynolds praised the tax cut packages she assigned as governor. DeGeer said those cuts are short-sighted. That debate, taking place one day after a new Des Moines Register poll, showed that Reynolds has a commanding lead over DeGeer. Reynolds leads DeGeer by 17 percentage points, 52% to 35%. The governor leads among evangelicals, men, and rural residents. DeGeer leads among likely voters with a college degree, among city dwellers, and among women. And there was also word that with just weeks to go before the November general election, the governor held a big money advantage over her Democratic challenger. As of a week ago, the governor had nearly $2.5 million on hand in her campaign, while DeGeer had $366,000. Also last week, word that two election analysts had slightly downgraded Iowa Republican U.S. Senate incumbent Chuck Grassley's chances of winning re-election next month, though they still say a Grassley victory is likely. This after the release of a Des Moines Register poll showing the race between Grassley and Democratic opponent Mike Franken has gotten closer. Grassley now leads Franken 46% to 43% among likely voters. That's the closest race Grassley has faced since he defeated a Democratic opponent by 8 percentage points back in his first Senate election in 1980. That same Register poll showed that Senator Grassley's age could be a factor in his re-election. He is 89 years old, and the poll shows 60% of likely voters say his age is a concern. Also last week, another new Des Moines Register poll showed two of Iowa's four congressional races are close between Democrats and Republicans, while the two others favor Republicans. Voters in the 2nd and 3rd districts are split, and the races are close. The poll did not mention actual candidates in any of the districts, only political parties. In the 2nd district, where Republican incumbent Ashley Hinson is running against Democrat Liz Mathis, 48% of likely voters say they would prefer a Democratic candidate, while 46% prefer a Republican. In the 3rd district, where Democratic incumbent Cindy Axne is facing off against Republican challenger Zach Nunn, 49% of likely voters prefer the Democratic candidate, 48% said they would vote for the Republican. The races are not as close in Iowa's 1st and 4th congressional districts. In the 1st District, where incumbent Republican Marionette Miller-Meeks is running against Democratic challenger Christina Bohannon, 50% of likely voters prefer the Republican, 41% say they favor the Democrat. And in the 4th District, where Republican incumbent Randy Feenstra is running against Democrat Ryan Melton, voters favor the Republican 62-33%. Also last week, word that 2nd District incumbent Republican Ashley Hinson had been released from a Cedar Rapids hospital after spending 2 nights there being treated for a kidney infection. Hinson's hospitalization resulted in the cancellation of a scheduled debate between her and Democratic opponent Liz Mathis that had been set for last Tuesday night. They already had debated once before. Meanwhile, the Register had more new polls, including one about abortion. The poll showed 61% of Iowans say abortion should be legal in most or all cases, while 33% say all or most abortions should be illegal. That same poll shows 85% of Iowans believe abortion should be legal in cases of rape or incest, and 89% support legal abortion if the pregnant woman's life is in danger. There was also a new poll about President Biden. It showed that majorities of Iowans disapprove of the president's job performance and say the country is headed the wrong way. 61% of Iowa adults say they disapprove of the way Biden has handled his presidency, while 35% approve. And 73% of Iowans now believe the nation is on the wrong track. Speaking of President Biden, the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals on Friday issued an order prohibiting the Biden administration from discharging any student loan debt under a Biden relief program until it rules on an emergency request by Republican-led states, including Iowa, to block the policy. The plan was set to start yesterday. Meanwhile, last week, yet another new Iowa poll showed Iowans are split on U.S. Senator Joni Ernst's job performance. 44% approve of what she's doing, 45% disapprove. Those results are nearly identical with those from the last Register poll in July. Ernst is not up for re-election this year. And with all of this election news, early voting started in Iowa last Wednesday. Election day is Tuesday, November 8th. Believe it or not, there was other news last week besides politics. On the health front, word that more than 2 weeks after a ransomware attack had crippled its parent company, the Mercy One health system in central Iowa was starting to restore certain systems that had been taken offline. They included the electronic health record system and the payroll system, which had been taken offline after the cyber attack at Common Spirit Health. Patients still could not schedule appointments online, but could call their provider's office to schedule an appointment. Ransomware is used by hackers to steal data and encrypt an organization's computer systems, blocking access until hackers' demands for a ransom are met. Also last week, word that the number of new coronavirus cases in Iowa had dropped for the 7th straight week. There were 1,508 new cases, or about 215 a day. Since the end of August, that number has dropped about 70%. The number of Iowans hospitalized with the virus also went down to 144 last week. That compares to 174 the previous week. And there were 27 new reported deaths from the virus last week in Iowa, bringing the pandemic's death toll in the state to 10,152 since the pandemic started. There was also a report that Des Moines plastic surgeon Ronald Bergman had agreed to pay $800,000 to settle claims that he overbilled Medicare and Medicaid for services. Bergman had been placed on probation by the State Board of Medicine last January, in part because of separate allegations that he had sent inappropriate text messages to an employee. In the world of agriculture last week, the federal government announced a program that will provide more than $1 billion in debt relief for about 36,000 farmers who have fallen behind on loan payments or who face foreclosure nationwide. And there was word that a mixed flock of 48 backyard birds in Dallas County had recently contracted a deadly and highly transmissible avian influenza. It was the first detected infection among Iowa's domestic and bird flocks since early May. Since late August, the virus has been found in at least 37 backyard and commercial flocks in Iowa's neighboring states. On the jobless front in Iowa, word that for the 2nd straight month, Iowa's unemployment rate went up a bit in September. The state's jobless rate was 2.7%, up from 2.6% in August. The national unemployment rate is 3.5%. There was also news about Altoona's plan to bring in a big chunk of land that's destined for industrial development, including a new data center. The City Development Board approved a request from Altoona to annex about 580 acres northwest of the city's boundaries. The properties are near the intersection of Interstate 80 and Highway 65, north of the sprawling complex of Meta Data Centers. There is no information about who might build on that new acreage. And There was word that Polk County's Board of Supervisors had approved naming the Justice Center for retiring county attorney John Sarcone in honor of the 32 years he has served as the top prosecutor in Iowa's biggest county. Sarcone decided not to seek a ninth term in next month's election. The Justice Center on Fifth Avenue in Des Moines will be known as the John P. Sarcone Polk County Justice Center. In the world of college football, Iowa style this past weekend, Iowa State University had the weekend off. The University of Iowa played Ohio State University. Ohio State won 54-10. And the University of Northern Iowa played Missouri State. Northern Iowa won 41-20. And that is your summary of quite a week of news from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, catching my breath now, and planning to be fully rested and raring to go tonight at 7 on KHOI's Capital Week, when Laura Bellin and I will dive into everything that's been going on in Iowa politics. And as you can tell, there's been plenty of that. Then I'll pay a return visit to Local Talk on Friday morning, and I'll bring along news of what's happening in Ames. And with all this going on, I hope we both have a safe, happy, and healthy week.
We got our own apartment just a mile from where we met. We spent the first months grieving, then we got ourselves a pet. I was low on money, and my dreams were crashing down. Said I needed one more record, another job, another town. You said I'm not sure if I can do that now. So I went out to find the answer, hoping to make it back somehow. The Dust Bowl Highway, like so many times before. I slept on a leaky camping bed upon the floor. I walked in dusky twilight through the old industrial zone. I was back in my old hometown, but I couldn't find my way back home. But I never forgot.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Week in the News, and that was M. Lockwood Porter. I went out to find the answers. And there's a bit of finding answers in our next story. During the High Trestle Hawk Watch earlier this month, Morgan Christensen participated, as she has in previous years. Just a fine young birder she is. And while we were observing, identifying, in tabulating hawks, eagles, and turkey vultures, I learned of an exciting bird study that Morgan has compiled. Morgan Christensen, welcome to Local Talk.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's so nice to see you once again here at the Hawk Watch.
Yes, it's a beautiful day out today. It's great weather. It's definitely been worse, so
yeah.
Sun's out. not a lot of wind, and we're seeing lots of birds.
Are you seeing a lot of your familiar raptors, you know, these birds of prey, owls and hawks? And
oh, yes, definitely. We've seen quite a few incipiters. We even have had a few falcons come by, and definitely a lot of vultures.
Yeah, excipiters. Now, that's a term. That's one of these birds that are hawks that take other birds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as so they're a bird of prey. Short, stubby wings and a long tail.
Definitely.
Kind of makes them a little bit different than the buteos or the red-tailed hawks.
Oh, yes.
A lot of red tails.
Yes, definitely.
Well, Morgan, may I ask how old you are?
I'm 13 years old in 8th grade from Madger Junior Senior High.
And our paths have come together at this Hawk Watch.
Yes.
For a number of years now. And I understand you did a report on
yes.
birds that I'd like to learn more about.
Yes. So recently I did a project called 2020 Derecho's Effect on Iowa Native Bird Populations. And that is because many people from Iowa would understand we had a derecho come through lately. And a derecho is a big storm full of straight winds. And it's almost like a tornado, but in straight winds form. And so we had a lot of damage here in Iowa. And me being a birder myself, since I've wanted to be an ornithologist since second grade, an ornithologist is someone who studies birds, and it all started from someone getting me a feeder and a bird book, and now I've just created this hobby. So seeing the derecho came through, it was really inspiring to start a project, seeing how this would affect our birds.
So you did refer to yourself as a birder.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah, 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 and I think I heard that earlier today by one of your mentors, Mike Havlick.
Yes, Mike Havlick, he actually helped me in this project a lot, which I will get to, but...
yeah, so you knew the impacts of the big wind
yes.
on an Iowa habitat,
mm-hmm.
basically our forest lands, and you were looking at bird communities on how they were impacted
yes.
by this derecho wind.
Yeah.
So did you try to look at all birds or just a certain number of birds?
So how I started the project off was I decided to choose three birds. I chose our northern cardinal, American goldfinch, and black-capped chickadee, since they are some of the most native birds here in Iowa, and they are very helpful to Iowa as well. Some of the ways that they're helpful in is that they're adhesive seed dispersals, which means that they might go eat a berry or a seed off the ground, and as it passes through their digestive tract, it's going to take off seed coat layerings, and when they dispose it into the ground, it's going to pack it full of nutrition, it's going to give it better benefits, and give it a higher chance of growing into a big tree. So that is one of the big roles they have. Another one is they have a big control on insect populations. So if you don't like insects, they're really helpful because they eat about 3 quadrillion insects a year. And it's truly incredible because you think, how is that possible? But you see a lot of your cliff sparrows, which like to live on bridges and above rivers or lakes or streams. And that's because bugs like to hang out in those areas. And they will go and dive and get about 100 bugs in their beak at once. And it's truly crazy to see.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing is you can't let these birds overpopulate. Otherwise, they will overuse resources in your community, and it's going to make it harder for some animals to survive. So they have big roles when it comes to populations.
Mm-hmm.
So I chose those three, and then my next big step was to choose 4 counties. So I chose Linn County, Boone County, because they were very affected by the derecho.
Lynn, over in Cedar Rapids area.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then Boone County, in my home county. So we were extremely affected. We had a lot of trees down, a lot of damage. And then I also chose Madison County, the county of the covered bridges. And that was because they were affected, but they didn't have as high as winds as maybe Boone and Linn County. And then I chose Dickinson County as well because it was not in the derecho's pathway at all.
In Dickinson County, far northwest Iowa, up in what we call the Great Lakes
yes.
area, or Spirit Lake.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, that sounds very comprehensive.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've set out a pretty good thesis for learning. And how did you go about gathering data?
So my next step was to go ahead and look at the Iowa Ornithologist Union, or just the Ornithologist Union in general. And what they do every year is they do a Christmas bird count, which is very similar to the Hawk Watch that we're here at today. And they will gather people from the community and they go and watch birds around Christmas time. And this is actually a nationwide program. So it's almost in every single state, and it's truly an incredible thing. I've attended it before. Mm-hmm. So fun. But all of this data is public online. So I decided to go on to there, and I documented all of the information for these three birds in four counties into a Google spreadsheet. So.
Mm-hmm. And was it a specific year, or what years were you looking at?
I decided to look at the years 2019 to 2021. And that is because in 2019 was the year before the derecho, and then 2020 was the year of the derecho, and then 2021 was the post year of the derecho.
I see. And you chose cardinals, chickadees, and goldfinches.
Yes.
Okay. Well, what did you find?
So for Boone County, our northern cardinal, our numbers were pretty steady in 2019. They raised a little bit in 2020, and then they like raised just a little bit more in 2021. But overall, they were really steady. Then for the American goldfinch, we were, again, okay in 2019. They dropped in 2020, and then they actually spiked in 2021. So I'm thinking, okay, that's kind of interesting, you know, why did they spike in 2021? Mm-hmm. So then moving into our black-capped chickadee, we were in 2019 at, you know, they were a higher number, but still pretty average. And then they went up, and which was kind of weird for 2020. We just had big winds come through. And then they dropped in 2021. So again, they were pretty steady. Mm-hmm. And then in Madison County, we saw pretty much the same thing, but with the black-capped chickadee, instead of being pretty okay, steady numbers in 2019, they were really low. And then they spiked in 2020. So again, it's like, why are they spiking when the derecho hit? Because if you know a black-capped chickadee, they're really small birds. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely a question. And then they dropped again in 2021, which I still thought was really interesting. But then when we look at Linn County and Dickinson County, we saw about the same data. So it was really, really interesting to get these results, especially when we had high winds in those years.
Do you think it's their nesting habitat that governed some of these population trends? By that I mean northern cardinals, they have kind of an open nest.
Yeah.
The goldfinches, of course, they're kind of a late nester. Mm-hmm. With a derecho in August. You would wonder about that have an impact on their nesting. But that black-capped chickadee, they nest in holes in the trees.
Yes.
They're a cavity nester.
So that kind of brings me to my next step in my procedure, was I had to analyze my data. And so this is where Mike Kavlik also comes in, as I decided to go to Mike Kavlik, who is the Dallas County naturalist. And I asked him, hey, Mike, look, I have all this information. Can you please help me analyze it? So we went through, and some really interesting things I found was with the northern cardinal first, we'll start, is they are really resilient birds. They can go through incredible conditions, and they can come back from it. So that is why we were seeing their numbers stay so steady. They never really rose, but they never really dropped. They were just kind of, mm-hmm. you know, steady. Well, then it brought me to the American goldfinch, and I thought, this one's really interesting. You know, they dropped in 2020, and then they rose in 2021. So I spoke to my Catholic, and one thing I knew about American goldfinches is that they stay here all year round, that they change colors in the wintertime. So a lot of people think they leave, but they're still here, but they look more like a sparrow.
Yeah, or people call them canaries.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
The Iowa canary, but it's really our state bird, the goldfinches. But they're not as colorful.
No, not
in,
anymore.
In
they
the wintertime.
Yeah, they don't have their kind of trademark. They're not
sure.
Bright yellow.
Okay. They were able to kind of weather the storm, if you will. Is that
Well, not exactly.
Not exactly.
In fact, they decided we had a drought in 2020 as well. And this takes a big role is because they lost a lot of resources from the drought. A lot of resources they used to survive. So they're already kind of iffy, but they have enough. And the derecho comes through and wipes almost all of their resources out. So they're like, okay, we can't stay here anymore. And this is one thing I learned about the goldfinch is that they're very migratory. So when they lost all these resources, they decided, how about we just kind of go to some neighboring states? And this was really interesting because this is what I tell a lot of people, is that's why we were getting a lot of phone calls from neighboring states saying, oh my gosh, Iowa, what the heck? Your state bird is here in our states, you know? Why don't you got any over there? And that's just truly because we didn't have the resources for them. Now, when we look, why was their numbers so high in 2021 then? And that's because they were going to these neighboring states and able to kind of grow their population again. But here in Iowa, we also had a lot of other animals leave because of the derecho as well. So that made it so our resources were able to build up, kind of. And when they came back, they had those all those resources to thrive. And that's why we saw such a high population.
Mm-hmm.
It was truly incredible to see.
The goldfinches really recovered in 2021.
Yes,
they really spiked
definitely.
Back. Interesting.
So now it comes to probably my favorite results because I find them the most interesting. It's like you said, the black-capped chickadee. You would think such a small bird, they would just be blown away by the straight winds.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turned out they weren't. And the reason is because, like you said, they are secondary cavity nesters, which means they like to live in trees. And your woodpeckers are going to be your primary cavity nesters. They're going to make the holes, and then the black-capped chickadees can live in the holes. So it kind of really works out for them, and that's one really important thing about our woodpeckers as well. But these little black-capped chickadees, now we have all these trees on the ground. They're dead, kind of decaying, and those are great homes for them. Just trees in general, those tight spaces, great homes. So we have all these trees down. Lots of resources for them, lots of shelter, lots of this stuff, giving them the opportunity to thrive. And that is why we saw their population numbers just absolutely spike in 2020. But kind of similar with goldfinch, is theirs rose, but why did the black-capped chickadees drop then in 2021? So I'm looking here, and one thing I found is not a lot of people like having five dead trees down in their yard. So a lot of people were cleaning up after the derecho, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it took a lot of those resources away from the black-capped chickadees, making it so they had to go to other parts in the state or out of state so they were able to survive.
Mm-hmm. Megan, let's talk about why these birds are important to you.
So these birds are important to me just because I've grown up around them. They're amazing birds. Just getting to be able to look outside your window and seeing those colors, seeing those personalities, truly incredible. So one thing I found is a great way to help these birds recover from the derecho is you can be planting Iowa native trees. This is because Iowa native trees are great for caterpillars. Caterpillars are great for birds. It takes 6,000 to 9,000 caterpillars to feed 4 baby black-capped chickadees, and those are crucial for them to survive. So a great way you can help our Iowa native birds is by planting some native trees such as oaks, hickories, black cherry, all sorts. It just helps them so much.
Your presentation is so perfect, almost professional. Where does that come from?
So I've been doing 4-H for years. And through 4-H, I've learned communication skills, presentation skills. I've also competed with this project in the Western Iowa Science and Technology Fair of Iowa and the State Science and Technology Fair of Iowa. And I have won several awards, first in biological science. I got champion in the state. I had the Naval Science Award. I got nominated for Broadcom Masters, which is a national competition. And all of those have truly just helped me build up my communication skills. So I try to encourage a lot of youth and my peers, people younger than me, people older than me, to get involved with projects, 4-H, community, because that's how you're going to learn how to communicate with other people.
Oh my gosh, there's so much more we could touch on, but Morgan Christensen, I want to thank you for all you do for conservation.
Well, thank you so much.
And what a great time it is to see you here at the Hawk Watch, overlooking a really tremendous valley. And you're sharing your home, it feels like.
Yes.
Every time I come to visit this stretch of the Des Moines River, I'll think, this matters to Morgan Christensen and her family.
Yes,
and
it does.
And to a lot of us. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, wasn't that delightful? Morgan Christensen, a strong young voice for the environment and living in Madrid. And I just enjoy being able to have the opportunity to meet people like Morgan Christensen from time to time. And that Hawk Watch she was referring to, that's usually the first Saturday of October, or early in October, at the High Trestle Hawk Watch. So it is 7:32, and you're listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum, your Monday Local Talk host today with engineer Mike Murphy. Let's welcome candidate for Story County Supervisor Lisa Heddens. Welcome to Local Talk.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning to you. Is it okay to refer to you as Lisa?
That is fine.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And you are currently an office holder of the Story County Board of Supervisors, and you are running again. And let's learn more about what motivates Lisa in that regard.
Sure. Well, I've had the great opportunity to serve the residents of Ames and Story County as both as a state legislator and now as a county supervisor. And there were a number of initiatives that we worked on at the state level that I really enjoy working on at the local level, being able to implement those initiatives. Kind of seeing it from beginning to end is what I like to do. I think we've done a lot of good things at the county. We've really been working with our mental health region, which is definitely a passionate area of mine, of working on mental health and disability issues, to further expand mental health and disability services and ensure that we've got greater access for people when they need them. With our FEDRA ARPA dollars, the American Rescue dollars, we were able to open up our funds. The county received about $18.9 million in those federal rescue fund dollars. And so we opened those up to applications to local communities, businesses, and nonprofits to help support community needs, such as affordable housing, broadband, childcare. Since your last speaker talked about the environment, we also put money towards like nutrient reduction initiatives or expanding the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail. All while balancing the budget and stuff. So those are one of the reasons why I'd like to continue serving on the Board of Supervisors, is to continue to work with people in communities to further enhance their goals and really make Story County a destination where people prosper in.
Yeah, well, very comprehensive, very interesting. How did you have an interest in politics growing up, or how is it that you became a state legislator and now a county official?
Sure. So my background actually is I got my degree from Iowa State in elementary education, had planned to go into teaching, and I did some substitute teaching within the area. I have two adult children, Mackenzie and Paul, and my youngest, Paul, who's actually going to be 28, so he's not that young anymore, has an intellectual disability. And, you know, I really found trying to navigate the quote-unquote system, whether it's the education system or trying to access Medicaid services for him, supportive community living services, and just not understanding what that meant. And thought, gosh, if I'm having a challenge, what is it for everyone else? And thought I could kind of complain about it or do something about it. And so that's when I first ran for the state legislature, was back in 2002. Much of what I worked on were mental health and disability issues, as well as economic development, environmental protection, public safety, supporting our veterans, education, and healthcare. I actually was either chair or ranking member of the Health and Human Services budget, which covered the Department of Human Services, Public Health, Department on Aging, and Veterans Affairs.
I'm curious about your commitment to education, and I'm presuming that is still one of your priorities. Could you flesh out where the governor's going with this voucher system?
And it's kind of hard. Sure, it's kind of hard because I'm not down at the state capitol, so it's all what I hear from my former colleagues and stuff. That would probably be a better question for Representative Wessel Crochelle or Senator Kornbach. But I think I believe that those public dollars should go to public schools because that's kind of how the system is set up. I do have some concerns personally with the vouchers and what that may mean for our public school systems when families can use them wherever. My concern is you'll end up underfunding a public school system where there may be concerns right now on performance, but performance oftentimes is due to being continually underfunded.
Okay. And I guess I'm curious about your campaigning. Of course, we've just existed through a COVID pandemic, and are you back on the campaign trail, or how is that proceeding for you?
You bet. I'm out there door knocking, going to functions, as I always have, meeting with people, go to work, and then pretty much, after work each night or on the weekends, going door to door.
And what is the message you'd like voters here in Story County to know about you?
I think I'd like them to know that, again, I firmly believe that mental health is one of the big issues that are facing Iowa, facing Story County. It affects students, it affects teachers, it affects, ourselves, our families, our friends. I have a background in mental health as the former executive director of NAMI Central Iowa before I was a county supervisor. So I have the experience, and, I also have the relationship still at our state level and many at our federal level, because I worked with them at the state level, to be able to advocate, for issues, on behalf of Story County because of those relationships. I've got people's phone numbers, in my phone that I can just reach out and talk with them, and have some credibility. I'm a great listener. I don't know if there's an issue going on unless I hear from people. I certainly am out there trying to reach out to everyone, but I can't, I can't touch everyone every single day. So it's real important to get that two-way street of communication, to have what's going on, to continue to provide opportunities here in Story County.
And I'm curious about the new 811 system that's been set up. Can you kind of help me out, learn more about that?
Yeah, that is to help folks have access to better services that they can contact and find out what is available in their areas.
Okay. As opposed to all the 911 was kind of our basic default or where we went initially for any type of social concerns. And now, so it's kind of streamlining that process, it sounds like.
It is. Yes, it is.
And as you're traveling around, how do you suppose others are describing you and your candidacy?
I think they're describing me as someone who's relatable, that's honest, and as I said, is a good listener, and someone who will get the job done. And if I don't know all the details of an issue, I will certainly, look into it further.
Well, Ed, one of our interests here at KHOI, and as we visit with candidates like yourself, and what do you think are the three most important needs of voters in this county? And you've emphasized your priorities, but is there anything anything further?
So I do think mental health is one of them, and working with our mental health and disabilities region, affordable housing, broadband. I think as more people are working from home, and are doing kind of that hybrid work from home and then going into the office, making sure that they have reliable, stable broadband is what's going to help them, prosper in their job opportunities. And we want to make sure that we have a hand in that. Story County, with our federal ARPA dollars, we were able to do a match with our local telcos and be able to have them pull down about an additional $14.4 million into Story County to help further expand broadband. We know there's still a need, but at least that's a start that we've been able to do.
It'll sure be welcome in Milford Township, where I live. I'll let you know that for sure. How would you involve and engage residents in the decision-making process? Now, you seem to be a very good communicator and with an education background and a real strong foundation in mental health. But what is your strategy? How do you go about community building exercises?
Sure. So one of the things us supervisors do is we all serve on about 8 or 9 different boards.
Oh.
That's part of our roles. It's either by state code, by statute, by 28E agreement with an organization, or because we're a funder. And so that really helps us understand more what's going on in the communities. Where we see gaps or issues going on, we can address those early on. But it's us not sitting in our offices. It's being out. And that's what we really try to do is, be out in the communities. Mm-hmm. So we further know what is going on so that we can certainly address those and partner with agencies or individuals early on. Mm-hmm. To provide quality services.
I just learned something then. 8 or 9 different boards, and I presume the mental health and your priorities are all have boards, but I didn't realize it would be that extensive. That you go to a lot of meetings, it sounds like.
We do. I oftentimes get asked what my typical day is, and we really don't have a typical day because for some of us, some of our board meetings start at 7:30 in the morning, and some of them start at 6 or 7 at night.
Sure.
So your day's not just an 8 to 5.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're doing a lot of meetings, I'm sure. But are there favorite places that you enjoy here in Story County? And would you like to share with us what brings Lisa Hedden some peace of mind?
I love everything about Story County, whether you're in Ames or, going down to Colo or up to Zeering. It's the quaintness of each of the communities. They're each a little different and have, they might have a bistro at one place, mm-hmm. or the trails that go through another. I can't say that I've got a specific favorite because I enjoy traveling throughout the county and really just seeing kind of the wonders of where I live. Ames, Iowa is my home. I moved here over 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And Story County is such a great county to live in with so much to offer.
Well, 40 years, that's a wonderful testimonial right there that you've grown some deep roots. Is there anything I've overlooked that you'd like to share with our listeners here as we wrap up?
Just one thing. I think, Pat, earlier when we talked, you asked me about the 811 system.
Yeah.
If I'm recalling correctly. Actually, I think what you meant, and that's what I was thinking, is the 211 system.
Oh.
Because 811 is where you call if you've got a line, like a line
For the problem. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
211 is the 211 is the information and referral system that links Iowa residents to Human Services programs. Yes. I knew what you were thinking, I just went on with that, but it is the 211 system. I want to make sure to clarify that.
Very good.
I just thank you for the opportunity to be on here today. I have enjoyed, as I've said, the opportunity to serve Story County as county supervisor. I think my background and my credentials lead me to be an excellent choice with the election. And if people haven't already voted, I would ask for their vote on November 8th.
Okay, well, thank you, Lisa Heddens, running for Story County Board of Supervisors. Thanks for being on Local Talk.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Have a great week, and good luck.
Thank you.
And a little bit more of Lockwood Porter. Let's welcome Emergency Management Director Melissa Spencer. Welcome to Local Talk.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm good today. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having us this morning. It's hard to believe a month has flown by again already.
Yes, it does. But we're still kind of in the autumn frame of mind with weather and all. We might get some rain. I sure hope we do.
Yeah, I sure hope we do, too, because it is dangerously dry out there right now. And any little bit of rain we can get will help for sure.
Well, have there been any fire emergencies pop up with this dry conditions?
We've been very lucky here in Story County that we've not had any significant wildland fires due to our dry conditions.
Uh-huh.
We hope to kind of keep it that way, and we hope that rain that we're supposed to get will kind of help decrease that risk a little bit.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you there, but
it's my fault. Sorry.
I've been kind of watching for the big smoke and, you know, better that things burn in the spring, but.
Yep. There's definitely some other counties around the state that have had a lot of issues with fires, and a lot of counties around us have instituted what they call a burn ban.
Uh-huh.
Where they do not allow any open burning. But so far, the fire chiefs here have not wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the potential for rain this week, so we'll kind of see how much we get. But it's not to say that something like that couldn't come in the next few weeks if conditions continue to remain as dry as they are.
Sure enough. But go ahead. Do you have workshops or anything planned that our listeners might benefit from?
I know we're into fall, and this actually is one of my favorite times of the year. But about this time of year, I start thinking about winter and how can we get prepared, for when winter gets here. And one of the things that we do, usually always the end of October, is we plan for when I-35, closes. 'Cause it seems like about once a year, the DOT closes I-35 right there at the Ames exit and starts diverting traffic off into Ames. So several years ago, we decided to bring some partners together in the community. So people such as the City of Ames, Iowa State University, the Red Cross, Discover Ames, which was formerly the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, is a huge participant, along with the Sheriff's Office, to say, okay, how are we going to help these folks that potentially could be stranded in our county for anywhere from just a few hours to, more than 24 or 48 hours. So we came together, had a discussion, identified all of our hotels here in Ames, which we have a very robust group of hotels, and brought in Red Cross to say, okay, how can we shelter these people? Especially if it's going to be more than just a few hours. So every fall, we do a drill just to make sure that everybody remembers the plan, remembers their piece of it, and that we make sure that personnel hasn't changed, that we have the same people that we call to get signage out, to do hotel room counts, so we know if we have enough hotel rooms available. And then Red Cross is a big partner because they can help us establish a shelter for individuals that maybe can't afford a hotel room. Or if our hotel rooms are full, they can actually open an emergency shelter for us. So we'll have that coming up on the morning of October 31st. And it's just kind of an internal drill for us. But it's something just to get everybody back in that mode of thinking coming into the winter season.
Comforting to know. Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, along with preparing ourselves as emergency responders, you know, it's also time to start thinking about how are you going to prepare yourself? You know, Iowa is always interesting. In fact, I just saw a news article this morning that said the Weather Service is expecting a La Nina pattern this year, which means we could actually have colder temperatures this year, but equal chances of snow. So 50-50 on if we'll have snow that's more than average or not. But, you know, before you get in the car, some things to think about. Did you winterize your car? Is it ready to go? Is your gas tank full? Does someone know where you're going and the route you're going to take? So if you don't show up, they at least have a place to go back and try to find where you may have run into trouble. A winter survival kit. So things such as blankets, boots, gloves, a small shovel, jumper cables, flashlights, tow ropes. So have that kit in your car. Dress for the weather. You know, even though you're going to be traveling, could be traveling in a car for several hours. If you would get stuck, you want to make sure you've got a heavy enough coat. You've got your boots and your gloves. And use 511. Iowa 511 Road Conditions app is a great resource to take, and they've actually just done that. So it is super easy to use that you can access those road conditions. And then again, think about, is it really worth driving in that snowstorm or blizzard conditions, or if the roads are super icy, you know, can the trip wait? You know, so those are just, you know, some real basic things to think about as we go into the winter weather season. And those survival kit things, kind of like when we ask people to prepare for their emergencies at home, you can buy those things a little bit at a time, you know, as you go through the year or leading up to those snow events to help you build that kit for your car.
Yeah, the kit for the car. Recently, I have a phone charger in my truck, and I don't use my truck a lot, but then recently I have been. And I would just pop in and, you know, plug the phone into the charger. And I've come to realize that it's really an inadequate charging system. Not sure how long I've had it, but having a phone charger that does charge the phone or expediently is one of the thing I'd like to bring up, because I decided I'm going to count on this phone charger sooner or later, and it's going to be kind of inadequate. So there's I guess it might be a shelf life on phone chargers.
Well, shelf life, and then technology changes so much too. Yeah. You know, a lot of the phones now, you have a completely different charging system that allow for rapid charging. Which is something that's a little bit new, depending on the age of your cell phone. And so that's entirely different equipment than a cell phone I had even 3 or 4 years ago. So making sure, maybe purchase that extra cell phone charging cord, you know, to have in your vehicle. You know, some of them, if you have an older one, it may still charge it, may just be a little bit slower. But yeah, definitely having that cell phone charger is important because, you know, it could be a while if you would slide off into the ditch before somebody could get to you. And having that cell phone that's fully charged and ready to go so they can continue to people can continue to contact you, whether it be 911 or be your family members or somebody, a friend that's coming to get you, it is important to have that resource there so they can keep that contact with you.
And a young person that knows technology suggested that when, you know, because I brought this up, I think my phone charger is wearing, you know, it's just inadequate. And the first thing he said was, put it on airplane mode, you know, when you charge it. That way the charger will go right to your battery as opposed to trying to run all these other applications at the time. And I thought, well, that's kind of a good suggestion.
That is a really good tip. And I think I'd heard about that, you know, from somebody else that did that with their phone. And I was like, huh, I might have to try that out sometime. But yeah, that is a good tip, using that airplane mode just to kind of maybe speed up that charging capability. But yeah, that is a really good tip.
I kind of thought about that. I thought, you know, I think there's some merit to this.
You know, just getting ready for winter. And you know, we all don't want to think about it. We want to enjoy fall, and we've had an absolutely gorgeous fall so far this year than we've had. But, you know, it is time to start thinking about what are we going to do, you know, and also think about preparing your home as well. You know, getting your furnace checked out, making sure your CO detectors, you know, that they have fresh batteries in them. You know, getting your furnace serviced, you know, winterizing, you know, if you have a home or a manufactured home, make sure your pipes are taken care of and that they have covers on them. And, you know, just thinking about what are those things that I need to do to make sure even my home is ready beyond when we think about traveling.
Yeah. Well, Melissa, is there any closing thoughts you have for us this morning?
I just really want to thank everybody for the time. I also want to share our office is fully staffed again. We have a new deputy coordinator that just started last week. So I'm working to get him up to speed. So that's very exciting news for me in the office this morning. So we'll have a new face out and around from our office. But again, just thank you for the time this morning and letting me talk about preparing for winter weather.
And your contact would be?
You can reach us by email at story. The email is on our webpage. It's Story County IAEM, so StoryCountyIAEM at storycountyiowa.gov. Or my main phone number is 515-382-7315. And we do have a Facebook presence where we do start to share quite a bit of information on preparedness.
Okay, well, that's great. Thank you so much, Melissa Spencer.
Thank you, Pat.
Yeah, for Story County Emergency Management. Hey, Local Talk airs each weekday at 7 a.m. on 89.1 FM. Local Talk is a training workshop as well as a show. So come on down and lend a hand if you have any interest in community radio. Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your summary of the news. And thank you, Local Talk producer Lynn Carey. And thank you, Mike Murphy, for engineering. And thank you for all that you do for community radio. Thanks to our guest, Morgan Christensen, middle school student at Madrid, Lisa Heddens, candidate for Story County Board of Supervisors, and Melissa Spencer. I have been your host, Pat Schlarbaum. Our theme song, as always, is backtracked by Tom Richards and Al Harris from the CD, The Ballad of Kate Sally. The other artist you heard was M. Lockwood Porter. I Want to Find the Answers. And hoping you have a great week enjoying birds in your backyard and at your feeders. And watch out for the deer. 'Tis a season. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and thank you for supporting KHOI Community Radio. And see you again on the radio.